You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In 1931, a con man named Harry Powers was convicted of the murder of a Massachusetts divorcee and of the murders of Asta Eicher and her three young children. He was dubbed the Bluebeard of Quiet Dell because of the way that he seduced lonely rich women, convincing them to cash in their fortunes and marry him, and then he murdered them. Though these events took place 82 years ago, Jane Ann Phillips says she's been haunted by the tale ever since her youth, and she's based her latest novel, Quiet Dell, on that real event. It's published by Scribner, and I'm very pleased that it brings Jane Ann Phillips back to our show. Welcome
great
back.
Great to be back.
Now, obviously, you weren't alive in 1931, but you say it was talked about, your mother talked about it?
My mother, for some strange reason, I mean, thousands of people were actually attracted by the press coverage, and it was such an otherworldly event at that time in 1931 in this very rural place. Quiet Dell was a hamlet of about 100, maybe 4 miles from my hometown.
A Buchanan, a town I never
Buchanan.
Heard of.
State champions 3 times in football within 10 years. But anyway, Clarksburg was the next largest town, and that is where the trial took place. But my mother told me when I was probably not much older than Annabelle, one of the main characters in the book, the 9-year-old Eicher daughter, that she remembered holding her mother's hand at age 6 and walking up this long, dusty, hot road with cars parked as far as she could see. And as they walked past what they called the murder garage, there was the sound of people taking the building apart piece by piece for souvenirs. And that statement just stuck, you know, stayed in my mind.
Well, wasn't that a bit scary to tell a young girl?
No. I mean, it happened 80 years before, and the people in the community really felt that it was something that had come in from outside, which in fact is true. I mean, the Sheriff Grimm says to Emily Thornhill, the reporter who takes on the case.
Is Emily Thornhill a real person, or is she somebody you invented?
Well, I'm not going to tell you, because you don't find out until the acknowledgments. Very, very few of the characters are invented. The case is all, it evolves in the book as it really evolved. The book is full of epigraphs that are from press clippings at the time, and it's full of photographs taken at the time by a local West Virginia photographer whose work had really disappeared.
So why write it as a work of fiction?
Because, you know, history gives us the facts, but narrative or literature tells us the story inside the facts. And I wanted to really make this family who simply vanished, I wanted to make them real again and make them alive.
Now, where in West Virginia is Quiet Dell? Because West Virginia is this odd state where Wheeling actually separates Ohio and Pennsylvania. It's pretty far north. And then the bottom of West Virginia, which was a border state, is almost deep south.
It's like three worlds in one. But Quiet Dell's in the north-central part of the state where Ohio, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia more or less are called the tri-state area. So It is a very different from the southern part of the state.
How did Harry Powers lure the women that he killed to Quiet Dell?
Well, he worked through matrimonial agencies, which were the Match.com of their time. They were often done through newspaper ads or what were called love magazines. Men read the love magazines. I mean, I think they got their names that way. Some respectable women, like Asta Eicher and Dorothy Lemke, were corresponding through an agency called the American Friendship Society, and that was how they got in touch with Cornelius Pearson, as he was calling himself at the time.
Well, this would be like online dating, wouldn't it?
It's like online dating, except it was a time when the written word and the word itself was what turned. Every little town had 2 newspapers that published twice a day, and people wrote letters. I mean, Powers was writing letters daily to a whole group of women, and in fact, he was writing to over 200 when he was arrested.
200 women in hopes of catching one or two.
No, he was very careful and very skillful at picking the most vulnerable people.
These were both widows, the two that he was convicted of killing.
The women he corresponded with were widows, but he had a whole code system of phrases that he used to progress a correspondence, and the women who became his victims were all women with whom he had agreed to marry them, or they'd agreed to marry, and he stopped. They didn't meet until this decision had been made.
So you had access to the letters, trial transcripts, and other things. Are they all easily obtained?
Not so easily. I found through the Harrison County Clarksburg Special Collections Room troves of old newspapers, scrapbooks that children had made about the case. Strange things sort of came to light through some of my internet research, small details about Powers through interviews, and of course his letters were published in the papers. I mean, the case was covered so voluminously as one of the first Depression-era crimes of this type that was, you know, seen as a lesson and a warning to women.
And it was a headline news story.
Oh, yes, for weeks. I mean, Powers' trial took place in the local opera house on stage before a backdrop of glittering forest trees, and the entire orchestra section was reserved for press from around the country.
Now, Powers wasn't his real name either. How many assumed names did he have?
We don't really know.
But he was tried under the name Harry Powers?
He was tried under the name Harry Powers, but one of the mysteries in the book is that journalist Emily Thornhill discovers his real name. And there's a kind of aftermath that I discovered in my research that's included in the book that people really weren't aware of as part of the narrative of the story.
And Emily Thornhill is intrigued by the story of the young daughter, Annabelle, who you depict as a fanciful 9-year-old obsessed with the passing of her grandmother. You picked her because that's how old you were when you first heard this story?
Not really. I was looking at photographs. There were a few photographs of the Eicher family. One of them, I've been carrying a copy of it in my wallet for probably 7 or 8 years. And her look in the photograph arrested me. And in my telling, she's a very imaginative child who writes tableaus and little plays. And her relationship with her grandmother, in my mind, was based on The Little Match Girl, that story. Because her grandmother tells her things like, your dreams see past us, and stories and poems are visits from the dream fairies who guide us in our sleep. And Annabelle has sort of fantasies or thoughts that the reader discovers may come to pass in a very different way than she imagines.
I'm speaking with Jane Ann Phillips, whose latest novel is Quiet Dell. And I remember from past conversations that you left West Virginia, went to California in the mid-70s on a cross-country trip, and that the things that you experienced during that trip have led to your interest in the kinds of stories that you've come to tell since. Is this similar to first there were the short stories, and then this is what, your fourth or fifth novel?
Fifth novel.
Do you see this as part of that, or is there some thread in your work?
I'm surprised you even remember that. No, I think my obsession has been perception itself, to try to get down in language the way people think, the kinds of adjacent spaces we occupy, fantasy, dream, waking life, memory, unconscious memory. I want to really let the reader feel that they enter the work. They don't simply read it. They become a part of the story.
Now, Harry Powers, he would marry these women or at least woo them and then convince them to give him all their money. And then they would go off somewhere and he would kill them. At least we know of two cases where that happened. But wasn't Asta quite broke? How much money could he have swindled from her?
Well, he didn't realize she was broke. And she didn't tell him until too late, I suppose. And he also thought that he could sell her house, which in fact was owned by the bank. The whole community of Park Ridge, Illinois, which is where the Eicher family lived, was involved in a sense because she was well known in the community. But it was a time in which, you know, women who had no resources were extremely vulnerable.
And then he took her off, obviously killed her, left the kids in the house, and then came back for the kids.
A housekeeper or nurse was with the children, and he came back to collect them. They thought they were going to join their mother.
Why did he feel it necessary to even come back for them? Couldn't he have just skipped town?
Read the book. I mean, I think, I know you did read the book, but I think that part of what the book looks at is who he was and what is inside people who can't feel empathy for others? Why did he do it? But the reader is with the children on that journey with him in two chapters of the book called A Child's Journey and Windy Nights.
Then they found bodies buried in backyard.
Exactly. The cover of the book, in fact, is a scene that the reader enters, as are all the photographs. This is the scene that Emily Thornhill enters when she arrives in Quietdale after driving all night from Chicago. And this scene in which we see this group of people dressed in their best clothes gathered in this woodland is the beginning of the story.
What happened after the trial? He was convicted, obviously. He escaped being lynched. There were people outside who wanted to kill him.
There was a lynch crowd at one point that's also covered in the book. But he was lynched in the end at Moundsville State Prison.
But
that is, he wasn't
government.
Lynched. He was hung.
Yes. Jane Ann Phillips, author of Lark and Termite, Motherkind, Shelter, Machine Dreams, also a collection of short stories, Fast Lanes, and another one, Black Tickets. This one is Quietdale, and it is published by who published it?
Scribner.
Scribner. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Well, thank you, Leonard. I just want to say that I'll be at McNally Jackson tonight with Nan Graham from Scribner.
Which I was just about to tell the audience. that is at 52 Prince Street. Thank you again.
Thank you so much.